Welcome to the Assembling Inclusion Podcast. On this show, we feature different programs, individuals, and initiatives focused on being more inclusive of individual needs. We invite you to learn right alongside us. If you want some additional resources or access to our courses, please visit our website or follow us on social media. But for right now, let's get right to the episode. Welcome back to the Assembly Inclusion Podcast. Today, we are joined by Jerry Majewski-Price, who is the founder and CEO of Feel the Beat. So, Jerry, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you. I'm really excited to contribute in any way I can.
And I actually heard about Feel the Beat because a couple episodes back, we did a whole feature on Shine Music, and I was like, I need to get in touch and have a deeper conversation about Feel the Beat. So I'm really excited to talk. Today.
That is so awesome. We love working with Sean and the Shine Music Festival.
So let's talk about the inspiration behind Feel the Beat. What led you to start this organization?
So my co-founder, Julia Faliano, and I, we were deaf educators, and specifically we worked in what's called a deaf plus classroom. So all of our students were deaf with some kind of significant secondary disability. So we got really creative with our curriculum and how we made things accessible and how we adapted our classroom to meet their needs. And taking that a step further, all of the classes that they had to attend, more mainstreamed things like art and gym and music, we came to learn how inaccessible they were. And it would be like the most miserable time of day just because they weren't included, not for lack of trying. It's just the environment was set up in such a way that it didn't work for them. So my co-founder and I went specifically into the music classroom one day and made it a tactile experience. So we played with feeling vibrations from an instrument, from speakers, having them take turns with different instruments and create it themselves, putting the rhythm into their bodies, so on and so forth. We then transitioned this tactile experience because they lit up so much, we started incorporating pieces of that into the classroom. And then they also loved movement activities, like breaks during the day. They would choose to do movement over a game, you know? So between the inspiration from how much they love to move, the reaction they all had to that tactile experience, and then the third component being how parents would come to us, like, what could we bring our children to after school? What kind of activities exist or programs exist over the summer? Where can I bring my kid, you know? And so heartbreakingly, not many places. And we tried to curate this list of here's all the programs, here's all the options. And it was bleak. So that just, you know, gave us another push to like, all right, maybe we create something. I also have a BFA in musical theater and a background in dance, as well as a master's in deaf education, special ed, and early childhood. So it was only natural to go down an accessible dance program direction. And I knew the moment we started discussing this, it had to have a tactile education component. Like, we weren't just going to make a dance class accessible because we taught in sign language. We had to make music accessible in some capacity. And that kind of propelled that journey and exploration into the technology world and how we found our technology and the device that we use. So it was definitely a process that got us here.
And I connect to the inspiration that you had with your students, because I had seen that with some classes with students, that the electives were so challenging because it was such an exclusionary thing for no other reason than like they didn't know how to include them in. So I appreciate that. And I can't even imagine. I never thought about the after school component, but you're right. Like, if it's not accessible in the school building, what are the chances that you have something after school?
Right. It was tough. And it's a struggle for those parents and families. And they just want to provide for their kids and make their upbringing as fun and fulfilling as it is for everyone else, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I wanted to talk about the technology piece specifically a little bit because I just thought that was so awesome. But I really want to, you know, focus on that. How does that work and how did you create it?
So to begin with, bone conduction technology has been around forever. It's a very small piece of it. It's a type of a hearing aid. People can have bone conduction hearing loss. So that in no way, shape, or form is our invention. That's existed forever. What didn't exist was the application of that technology and the size and quantity in which we were using it. And so, mind you, before we even got to the bone conduction, we tested out every type of tactile technology out there. I mean, like absolutely everywhere and anywhere I found things from, we tried them out. Julia and I got, you know, nitty gritty, hands dirty, you know, figuring it all out, tested everything, worked with engineers, worked with sound engineers, and then put together this really passionate team of professionals that come from all different kinds of backgrounds and specialties. And together, we brought it to the next level. We're like, okay, this kind of technology is cool, but it's not quite what we want. Or this technology is great, but it really just provides those low frequencies, that heavy bass, the heavy drum. You're not provided a whole range of music and sound. So flash forward several months since our founding, one of our engineers stumbled upon Clark Synthesis and their platinum bone conduction transducers. It's a very specific transducer. So when your body is in contact with this technology, it resonates sound through your bones and goes into your mastoid bone. And you're not necessarily feeling like the floor is vibrating. Your body is perceiving sound and music because your bones are vibrating. And to give you kind of a different perspective, the way you and I and anyone without a hearing loss hears and perceives sound are through airwaves. So being able to experience sound by bypassing where that typical hearing loss is, you know, pretty powerful. Certainly, there's a range of how powerful it can be depending on the hearing loss and the different degrees of all of that. But I would say 99% of the individuals that have experienced our floor has been hit. You know, it hit their heart. It hit their being. It gave them the chills. It stopped them in their track. It's been powerful for more than the majority.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And that's really impressive because I think my first thought was, yeah, you think about just feeling the bass in movement, but that's really awesome how you can feel the intricacies of music at a deeper level with the floor.
It's really cool. I mean, we play bluegrass music on it. We play classical ballet music on it. And then, you know, of course, hip hop and the whole range. And it's so cool how it makes all of it accessible.
So how does a typical class look? Does the class take place then on that floor? How are you ensuring that there's this inclusive feel to each of the classes that you offer?
There's a lot of components that go into that. To begin with, kind of on a parallel, of course, we have the floor that provides access in itself to anyone who is deaf or hard of hearing. It also provides a different kind of access for anyone on the spectrum, anyone with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It provides sensory integration and it provides emotional regulation. It's like a extraordinarily large weighted blanket, if you can imagine. Like it just zones in on those extra emotions and that sensory input that a lot of those individuals require. So that in itself, just the technology, provides that benefit. Then on the other side, we have put together a very particular curriculum that was designed to meet all of these individuals' needs. So I will say, depending on who we have in the classroom, like sometimes I'm teaching a group of only deaf and hard of hearing students, I'm going to teach the class much differently than if I have a class of all wheelchair users or a class of all individuals with different types of vision loss. That being said, our general framework of the curriculum is the same across the board. So one, we make sure to break down without verbally explaining what it means to connect to music, to connect to sound, and then put that rhythm and that rhythmic education into your body, feeling it, getting the muscle memory of it, connecting sound, feeling sound, music into dance and how we follow along and put that to movement. There's about 15 minutes of, we can call it a warm-up in class, that goes through the motions of breaking down music, movement, sound, putting it into your body and practicing rhythm in different ways. And that could be, we're doing warm-ups as well. Like, we'll, you know, bring our shoulders up and down, but we're doing it very particularly to the beat and we're counting both verbally and in sign language. So all of our classes, I should say they are all visually dependent. So kind of like a Zumba class, like we try not to use language, you know, lessen those limits across the board. I always say to all of my instructors, if you're going to speak, you must sign so that you are not leaving anyone out. So all of our instructors who teach publicly available classes at least have conversational sign language skills. All of our teachers go through a specialized adaptive dance education program that we've curated and like a certification program. And then all of our classes have at least one teacher assistant. And that assistant can either work one-on-one with that kid who just wants to run around, can work with a student who is really having difficulty implementing that beat and like following along, could also work with a student who needs physical support. I should also include, can work side by side with students who have vision loss and give additional verbal descriptions. We're always providing different adaptions and accommodations to our students to meet the ongoing needs. Then on top of that, you add in props and materials that we include in the classroom. And again, kind of depending on each student and the population that we're serving in that moment, depends on what type of prop may be needed. But we have different sensory tools. We have different visual schedules or markers. We have those tactile dots to sit on. Then we have, you know, different components for physical support. So anything from a chair, we have side-by-side ballet bars to hold on to, you know, just different components that help make our program accessible to really anyone that walks through the door.
Oh, yeah. I can see just from all of the examples and just the thought that was given to staffing and program development and the resources, you can see just how much Feel the Beat has really worked to make sure that everybody who's coming into that space can enjoy dance and learn and just feel included within the environment. That's really impressive that you managed to successfully build all that in one space.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I will say it takes a village. We're so blessed with the team and the people that we've been surrounded with.
I had saw on the website that Feel the Beat has impacted around 6,000 or so students directly and 20,000 students in terms of the technology access. But I wanted to know, do you have any specific memorable moments or successes from the organization's journey that you've had so far that you'd like to share? Is there anything that sticks out to you?
Oh, definitely. I have one of my favorite stories, and we have, you know, so many we could share. But we had one student that we started with, I think she was like 8 or 9 years old. It was year one, you know, bare bones, just opened her first studio. And she was a student that had cerebral palsy, had a feeding tube component, and used a walker for physical support. And she came in, mind you, she had been wanting to dance. She would make different poses and movements at home with her mom on a regular basis. And they would contact us like, she so needs a dance program for her. Like, she's so excited. So she comes in for her first class with her, and knowing that excitement and everything, she was the definition of an introvert. Like, she was inside of a shell. Her head was down. She wouldn't pick it up. shoulders were contracted forward. She was also deaf. So anything she signed was like super small. You couldn't even understand what she was saying. She had very minimal balance skills. She didn't try to show coordination skills. And when we were doing any movements across the floor, again, she'd be like contracted in herself, head down, and just like bopping her walker across the floor. Flash forward, I don't know if it was 2 or 3 years of working with her. Not only has the coordination and the balance and the confidence grown and all those kinds of things, and her head's up high and she's memorizing different programs and, you know, different classes and movements. And if I make a mistake, she calls me out on it. It's so cool. But there was this one moment we had been practicing this one routine, this one piece of choreography. We have, you know, the different movement adaptions that we provide for our seated dancers and our dancers using some kind of physical support and all those kinds of things. Well, she wouldn't have it. She literally like threw her walker over to the side and she fully, to her capacity, did this routine top to bottom, showing her core strength, showing her coordination, her balance, and like memorization and the smile. And you could see parents from the viewing window. She's like looking at mom like, "Mom, look at this. Look at me. Look at this." I couldn't hold back tears. Mom couldn't hold back tears. The teacher assistant could. It was like the coolest moment. And that's just one of my favorite stories. But, you know, we have plenty of those to share.
That's amazing to see. I'm sure it rings true for everybody who participates. But the growth and the confidence, that's just amazing to hear about, to go from feeling shy at the beginning and introverted to feeling so confident in her abilities and skills.
It was really a beautiful moment.
What are some of the goals that you have for the future of Feel the Beat? Because obviously there's a lot of successful stories going on in terms of students who have gone through the program. But do you have any upcoming projects or initiatives that we should be on the lookout for?
So our goal from the beginning has always been to provide this kind of accessible programming and music and sound accessibility nationwide, maybe one day worldwide, you know, but a slow and gradual growth process is something we are really looking towards and taking actions on. Most immediately, we just opened up our third partnership facility. So we have our flooring in our main studio, another dance studio that has three different studios. So we have one that went into their smaller studio facility. And we offer adaptive classes there, and they have the capability of using it and expanding their access as well. We're trying to get into Cleo Parker Dance, which they're about to rebuild this whole new structure. And we're in the works to make one of our floors happen in their facility. And then hopefully this summer, we're planning on installing flooring at Colorado School for the Deaf and Blind. So those are like the most immediate projects that we have on the table, but we're also in conversation with some places in LA and New York, and those would be kind of the next places that we expand to.
Oh, that'll be exciting to see kind of this curriculum, the environment, spread its way across the country and being able to impact more students. If we have any listeners or anybody who wants to get involved in some way, whether it's volunteering, donations, how could they do that?
I mean, always visit our website. There's so much information there and ways to contact us as well. So that's www.feelthebeat.dance. I know, .dance is very, very different, but perfect for us. And then you can always reach out to us at either info@feelthebeat.dance or directly to me, which is Jari, J-A-R-I. @feelthebeat.dance. And we welcome anyone interested to contribute in any way, shape, or form. As I said earlier, our team has been a monumental piece of how we've grown and how we've gotten to where we are.
Perfect. And I'll make sure to include all the information in the show notes for anybody listening. But I just want to thank you so much for being here with us today and telling us all about all the great work that Feel the Beat is doing. It's really incredible. And I appreciated you taking the time to tell us a little bit about it and all the inclusive work being done in this space.
Thank you. Well, I so appreciate your reaching out and including us and the work that you're doing. It's beautiful that you're sharing about all of these different accessible and adaptive programs and spaces, and it's wonderful, and we need more of this. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Assembling Inclusion Podcast. I hope the information in this episode taught you something new, gave you a new idea, or showcased a new perspective. If you liked the episode, feel free to leave us a review or comment. If you have a recommendation for an individual or an organization who would make a great guest, you can message us or send us an email at assemblinginclusion@gmail.com. See you next time.